Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard? Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy. What? Come on. We call it
the place to be.
The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can...
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said!
Why do I want this?
Yeah.
Because I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it is now time for the Place to Be podcast. And now your hosts, Justin Rosero and Scott Criscolo.
I will always be around. Won't you tell me what you found, girl? Ooh, girl, won't you?
Hello there, Place to Be Nation. Look at that, throwing a curveball tonight. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Place to Be podcast. I am Scott Criscolo. Studio B tonight for this week's special edition of the Place to Be podcast. Of course, I am not alone, as never is he. My PIC and co-host, as always, Justin Rosero. Good evening, sir.
What's up, Scott? I know I'm going to sound like I'm calling from deepest, darkest Africa over here with Slick and Akeem. But
you wish you were in deepest, darkest. Oh, boy. Well, it is a pleasure to hear your voice, sir, as always. We got a special Place to Be podcast this week. That's why we're kind of a little shifting around here, the technical sounds and me opening, and it's a special episode because we have a special, special guest.
Yes, and I have been all zoinked up all day, and there's two reasons. One, I watched this weird show on WWEClassics.com. It was about the most bizarre wrestlers, and the main event of this show was a Superstars match, or a dark match from 1992 that featured The Undertaker teaming with The Ultimate Warrior to take on Berserker and Baba Shango. So that got me all jacked up this afternoon. That's like a dream match.
Oh, that's right up your alley.
And that set the tone for our tremendous guest that we have been waiting many months since we started this podcast to speak with.
Yes. I would let you open, sir. Go right ahead.
Okay. He is the, as you would say, purveyor of the history of WWE.com, the message board, the blog, the website, and all of its awesomeness. Joining us from the Dirty South, it is Graham Cawthon. Graham, how you doing tonight?
Good, guys. How are you?
The pride of the Shelby Star is with us. An absolute pleasure to have you on tonight, sir. How you doing?
Well, thank you very much. As a side note, I remember that match because it was only, and this is going to show actually how young I am. That match was on the first Coliseum home video I ever rented, Rampage 92.
It must have been some tape, and it had... That's right, I should have figured it was from a Coliseum tape, because Gorilla and Lloyd Alfred were doing the commentary on it, so...
Yeah. But no, I remember that one quite well. It also had Bret and Shawn on there for the IC title.
Was that the one with the ladder match? Or that was
No, that was just a straight-up match.
Because there was one tape, I think it was like Invasion or something, had Shawn versus Flair and... Oh, maybe that was with Bret and Flair and Shawn and Flair. There's one tape that had like three ridiculous matches on it. I think it would have been like
they
Invasion
had,
92.
Well, the ladder match was on Smack'em Whack'em. And
so
then,
it was Bret Flair, right?
No, well, yeah, it had the title match. It had the title match, but also had Shawn and Bret, the ladder match.
Okay. And then I think of another one that had Shawn and Flair on it. That was a different one from, I think, a year earlier.
Oh, that was Invasion. Yeah.
Okay, that was a vision. All right, we're putting
it on rocker.
Let's get this thing going here.
Well, I'm actually going to go to our fine guest's website to look up this because he does have all of the VHS and DVD lists on here. So I'm going to look it up. But before
we do that,
yes, go ahead.
Let's get Graham just to indoctrinate him into our audience here. Graham, why don't you just give us a quick overview of your history as a fan and what led you to create the website that you have and just kind of what your goal is with that site?
Okay, I'll do a synopsis here. Grew up loving the Yapper mags and especially the ring results in there. Fast forward about 10, 15, almost even 20 years, going online, finding that there's almost nothing that kind of compiles all that stuff. So with a whole bunch of free time, I start doing it myself. And years later, it's become what it is now. you know, I get lots of feedback and lots of help from folks all over the world that email and stuff that, you know, I went to this show back in 87. Here's what happened. You don't have it listed, but, you know, here we go. I get help from people in the industry. So it's really grown into something far bigger than I had conceived.
Yeah, because I was always amazed thinking of, you know, how you'd come up with these cards. And I know for a while, whenever I'd go on your board, the older version of your board that you had, you know, a lot of those guys on there would kind of go through tapes for you and send you a post on there, you know, saying, oh, I watched this and this and this. And
yeah.
So a lot of it early, yeah. Was that just hunting on the internet, or did you watch a lot of these shows to compile the results?
Early on, it was a combo of what footage that I have, you know, on hand at that moment, because I used to be kind of into the tape trading thing, so I had a bit to choose from. I still had some magazines, and then once I kind of got the foundation there, and people would stumble upon the website and see what was already there, that, you know, this guy is kind of serious, then that's when I started getting just huge outpouring of help from just, you know, the most random list of people.
It is, I mean, it's almost so impressive and even overwhelming sometimes to look at is the idea of that you were able to compile these, you know, cards from all these house shows and superstars tapings, and it's like I go to it and I'm like, you know, I'd see shows that I went to, you know, at the Providence Civic Center, like, you know, in the early 90s, and I'm like, wow, I mean, that all these matches were there. It's just an amazing, and, you know, because some sites you see have the TV results or the pay-per-view results, but the fact that you just have all those house shows, you know, dating back to the, you know, early to mid-80s and even before that is just crazy impressive.
Well, I think my philosophy, if you want to call it that, and to kind of set this apart from what other people have done, is I really think detail is key. I don't want to just know who was at the show. I don't want to just know who beat who. If I can find it, I want to know the finish. I want to know how long the match was. I want to know who interfered. And putting that stuff in there has really helped set this apart from other sites that kind of do the same.
I believe I might have found the tape, guys. If this is what we've been talking about, it's Invasion 92. It has Flair defeated Brett via countout at 1918 when Perfect pulled the champion off the ring apron behind the referee's back as Brett attempted to get back into the ring. That was actually in my hometown, New Haven Coliseum.
I thought there was another Brett Flair.
And then the other match is Flair pinned Shawn
at
10-11 with his feet on the ropes after Michaels missed a dive to the floor, knocked himself out, and was rolled back in the ring by Marty Jannetty, who had come ringside to check in his tag team partner. And that was about a month later.
And so those must have been, late 91-ish, right?
The Flair-Brett was November 12th, and Flair-Shawn was December 2nd.
Okay, so that was one of their last kind of rockers thing.
Right.
Yeah.
See, look at this. That's why, folks, this is a wealth of information, this website, because you can find anything, anytime, anywhere. I even counted, Graham. I went to the ring results because, again, my home arena was the New Haven Coliseum, and I actually was able to count back to 1987, which was the first house show I went to, all the way till I think it was 94, or at least until 96 or 97. So I probably went to close to 45 shows at the New Haven Coliseum over a 13-year span. And your site did that. So it's amazing. Yeah, I mean, the house shows at that arena were cheap. I used to, you know, $8, and I used to sit high, and we only sat 8,000 people. So it was, and the matinees were cake. So the matinees were sometimes even cheaper. So, of course, a lot of the times I'd get, you know, the following will not be here due to unforeseen circumstances. It'd be like Brett, Shawn, fucking Luger. Like the main event would be like Bigelow against Doink or something because half the card wouldn't show up.
Now, there
like
actually
that.
Was one show we couldn't find. We had our buddy Jordan Duncan on this show a while ago, and he said he remembered, like, he was reminiscing about the show he went to in Detroit in either 89 or 90, and the main event was Warrior and Andre, and which seems like obviously was a main event around that time. I know they were working the circuit, but we could not find it. We looked at the arenas. We looked at Cobo Hall and a couple other ones in that area. So I'll have to try to get the details from Grant. Maybe it's a hidden one for you.
Now I've got, and if it's not there, feel free to send me what he remembers, but I've got a page, actually a few pages, devoted to Joe Louis Arena.
Okay, I'll have to look there a little bit deeper. I was kind of doing it as we were talking, and part of me was hoping to crush his childhood and be like, that show never happened, you're dreaming. So that was my goal, it succeeded. Greg, do you remember that Invasion tape? I don't know if you ever remember watching it. My cousin, who kind of got me into wrestling back in like 1990, used to always, you know, rent the tapes and, you know, he'd dub them and whatever, you know, the rudimentary equipment we had in 1991. But I remember that tape. They had like a fake like Star Trek thing with Sean Mooney.
That was so bad.
Yeah, it was awful, right?
Yeah, and it had Hogan, Typhoon, and some other crap on there. But then the Flair matches obviously made the tape.
Yeah, those are kind of the hidden gems on there. I think there was one with like Legion of Doom and somebody against Beverly. I don't know if Ellering was there at that point. He might have been. It was like him and Ellering against the Beverlys and the Genius, I think. That was the other match I remember from
That match, I think, is actually on Rampage, which we mentioned earlier. I think he was just a regular tag on Invasion.
Okay, that makes sense.
What was the date that Jordan said? Did he say 89 or 90?
It had to be 89 if it was Hogan.
Had to be 89.
If it was Andre Warrior. It had to be, either late 88 or through 89. Because by 90, Andre wasn't doing that much of that, I don't think.
All right, let's see. According to your Joe Louis Arena file, there were three shows at Joe Louis Arena, April 29th, July 22nd, and November 19th. And according to these, I don't see Warrior or Andre on any of them.
Well, because then Jordan said it could have been Kobo, but then I think I looked at all the Kobo shows, and I didn't see him there either.
I'll have to take a look. All right. But
if it was any of them, it would have been closer to November.
That's what I would think, yeah. It was kind of around Survivor Series when they were doing that whole thing where Warrior would beat him. Because Jordan, he pretty much explained how it was. Warrior would beat him in, 40 seconds, slam him, and then pin him.
Right.
Right.
Or count out.
So how did it start, Graham, that you were just getting all this stuff? Like, what, you built this site, and then obviously I'm sure you put some of these card results on here, but how did it start that you were just getting this rush of information and all these people were saying to these cards, and like, how did that get started? How did that that flow of info and participation get going?
Well, I think a lot of it was just people saying that I was serious with what I was doing, that, this was the kind of the collective memory of what you want to call the WWE universe now. And I think it ties in with a lot of people's childhoods. If you grew up a wrestling fan, you have it ingrained in your brain, the first show you ever went to, you remember, things like that. But there are plenty of things that you might have forgotten over the years. I've had people say, I remember I was, here's the date, here's the arena, here are three guys that were at the show. I don't remember anything else. Please help me track that down. So it's not only an archive, but for a lot of, longtime fans, it's a huge resource to remember what, shows that they had gone to, but just didn't remember everyone that was there. And they see that, it's been growing over the years, so they kind of want to, throw in their two cents.
And I know it was great for a resource for even guys like us that, try and do comprehensive reviews and just that we kind of do a little fun facts that to do the build-up to the match, and just having your site to kind of go through the weekly shows, especially once we got to, by the mid to late 2000s, a lot less people were doing, full Raw and SmackDown recaps. Like, it was easier to use those in the late 90s, early 2000s, but once we started getting to 2005, 2006, because that's when your site, I feel like the Raws are really just very detailed, and I'm guessing that's kind of when, your site was already up and going and you would just update it week to week, I'm sure. So the results on those shows are just, so detailed that, for even stuff like that, they come in handy.
Yeah, well, it's good and it's bad. It's good because, that serves as such a huge resource for folks. It's bad because I have to watch the really crappy stuff in so much detail, and I have to relive it even more.
Yeah. Now, is this something, because I know where we're at with our reviews and stuff, it's like something you never obviously want to give up, and now as you're moving on, I know, obviously, like, congratulations as well. You were recently engaged, if I'm correct.
Yes.
Congratulations.
And also, holding down a steady job, a good job. Is this something you envision yourself continuing? Do you envision yourself kind of handing it off? It must be at some point, being such a completist as you are, similar to us, it's like something, you don't want to miss one because then it might never be what it is. But is it something you see yourself, always trying to continue, or do you have kind of a goal in mind of where you want it to be?
Yeah, I think I'm going to continue it until I can't anymore for whatever reason, and I think that's probably going to be forced on me more than me opting to get rid of it. But I don't see myself stopping anytime soon. I think I've pretty much pissed all over that website to the fact where I've claimed it as my own. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to let someone just come in and take it. Right. I put a lot of work into that thing, and I'm really proud as to where it's, where it's gotten to at this point. So I'm just going to keep going until I can't.
I mean, at this point, too, it must run pretty well-oiled for you because you know what you're doing. And you're caught up with a lot of the older stuff, I'm guessing, so now it's just maintaining as the newer stuff pours in. You're not really probably having to go back and mine as much that you had to in the early years.
Right, right. I mean, I've watched all the Clash of the Champions. I've watched all the Saturday Night's main events. I've, you know, if there's a pay-per-view I haven't sat down and really thrown detail at, you know, it's few and far between at this point. You know, you're probably talking about, you know, a handful of the harder-to-find in-your-house shows. But at this point, you know, it's basically maintaining. Whenever folks send in stuff, I try to get that up and running as soon as possible. And it's to the point now where I've got a lot of folks asking, please expand.
Mm-hmm.
And by expand, that doesn't mean more, you know, of the same. That means more territories.
Right.
And I just don't know if I can juggle that right now. We've got ECW, got WCW. Expanded on the NWA back in 1983.
That's something that amazes me the most because their shows to me, always, and even the, Scott and I kind of started reviewing their big shows and into their pay-per-views is what our goal is, and it's like their history to me is such a mishmash. Like, WWF, I can rattle you off every pay-per-view in order. I know, you know, I know most of their stuff, but even like WCW in the 90s, I think those house shows were just seemed like they were so all over the place. Was that hard to put together?
Not really, because when I got into wrestling, it wasn't just WWF. I mean, if I could, I would get the TV guide and go through page by page and find every wrestling show I could and watch it. So, you know, that was ingrained early on. What's interesting is over the years, you can see a real change in how the shows are booked. Back then, especially in Crockett, you did not sell the show on every single match. You sold the show on the top two matches, and it would be kind of like what you would see on Superstars today. I mean, these weren't, okay, for instance, you would have maybe a Ric Flair, okay, 1983, for instance, Ric Flair, Bob Orton, and then maybe Ricky Steamboat, Greg Valentine. And then the rest of the show were, you know, squash matches or, I mean, just, you know, nobody matches.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting to see how back then they were sold on the main events. And today, especially when it comes to big pay-per-views like WrestleMania, every single match is a draw unto itself.
And, right. The other funny thing, too, is, Graham, watching the first couple of Starcades that Justin and I reviewed, it also, you have to remember, Crockett was also making deals with other promotions at the time. Because at Starcade, I think it's Starcade 84... Art Barr was defending the Florida heavyweight title against against Mike Graham. So not only were they making the show as a whole was pumped up by Flair, Dusty, and then something else. And that year, I think it was Tully and Steamboat. But then the individual promotions got to pump the show up, putting their own matches in. So that was another was another situation too that they kind of had to, you know, scratch each other's backs. And
right.
You know, and then of course then you had promotions like the AWA, which did it poorly. For instance, that Super Clash at Comiskey Park where they had all these guys and all these fake belts. Meanwhile, they'd go in the back room and Crockett be sitting there taking all the AWA talent away. So it was, you know, well, then again, nobody liked Vern anyway. But if you had a chance to, has anyone given you other, again, you have a huge cachet of WWE shows. You have a huge cachet of WCW shows in terms of results. And some ECW. Mm-hmm. Have you gotten some other like little stuff? Have people sent you Ring of Honor cards or AWA or some other kind of smaller stuff? Or has it basically been the big three?
Well, they haven't sent. Now they have said, you know, they've requested, you know, have you thought about expanding? And I'm not really to a point where I can.
Mm.
But it's kind of interesting for a lot of current fans. Guess what promotion they would like me to expand to?
TNA?
Exactly.
Ugh. Really?
And
wow.
It's like, you know, I've seen, I am not necessarily a TNA hater simply because I'm a quote-unquote WWE guy, but I can't watch the show. It hurts my head.
Mm-hmm.
Join the club.
So yeah. I can't, there's no way I can conceivably start archiving all that stuff.
And before you came on, Graham, actually, Scott, I were talking about, I guess there's some news that broke today that TNA officials have been discussing rebranding the company to take a different approach with their product, change to their name has been considered as well. The idea is to give their product a recognizable identity to make it clearly different from WWE, and the changes could be sooner rather than later.
But didn't they try to do that last year when they brought Bischoff and Hogan? Didn't they try to do that years before? I mean, I really think they were the most distinct they ever were before they started bringing in WWE guys. I think at their peak, which was Joe, AJ, and Daniels, I think that's when they were doing it right.
And it's funny because it's very similar to me, their last couple of years before the Hogan stuff, to WCW in like 94, where a lot of people would argue that the product, you know, was actually way better, the to watch WCW in that early, late 93, early 94 period. But they brought Hogan in, and he brought the mainstream eye that wasn't. So, you know, there's always that debate, were they better off always being a smaller promotion with a better product or a bigger promotion with maybe a more watered-down product, but something that could be a viable contender. And I think TNA tried to recreate that, whereas, you know, they had a pretty hot in-ring product, I think, you know, in 2008, 2007, 2008, and then they bit the bullet and tried this Hogan and Bischoff thing, which has obviously been a disaster.
In retrospect, I really think that they got off track when they started seeing dollar signs on former WWE guys. Mm-hmm. I was thinking back when I was in Atlanta, and I was talking with some of my friends, and I was saying, you know, if I were to think at exactly what point I started losing interest in TNA, and I don't think it's a direct correlation. I don't think it's this guy's fault. But I really think the moment they brought in Kurt Angle, I started losing interest. And it quickly after that became, we can't put anyone over strong. Everyone's in that same level.
Right.
No one can beat anyone clean. And I just kind of got tired of it.
I mean, the only way I think they're going to make a radical change is, I mean, Hogan and Bischoff obviously have to go. And it's too bad, too, because I think Bischoff could be useful in the right situation. I just don't think this is it right now with him and Hogan there together. And I think Russo needs to go, whether he's a main guy or not. And I don't know, Dixie Carter's always kind of been this big Russo fan, but I think he needs to go as well. And they just need to get, you know, I know Heyman is always kind of thrown around as some kind of cure-all for everything, but I just think he would represent the kind of radical change that they would need. Part of me would also say, you know, if they could bring in a couple of the guys from Ring of Honor. Yeah, I've been listening to a lot of those podcasts with Dave Lagana, and he seems like he kind of has a grasp on, you know, of what maybe a lot of the internet fans who are tired of WWE's product would like to see. So maybe if they did kind of purge their system and bring in some of the guys that help run Ring of Honor, maybe they could, you know, turn things around a little bit. Will they be in mainstream?
Also,
I don't know.
Also, remember one of those guys helping run Ring of Honor right now used to be in TNA, and I don't think he'd ever go back, and that's Jim Cornette.
No, definitely not. I don't think he'll ever go back to either of those two promotions. I think he's
done
both of them.
I don't know. Everybody's forgiven in WWE, so don't be surprised if you do see him back. I'm not saying in a management role.
I think they would take him back in a moment. And in fact, we're my fiance and he and his wife are pretty good friends, and we went out to lunch in Atlanta, and this was the day after Hall of Fame, so it was the afternoon of Mania, and I said, Jim, you know, I went to the Hall of Fame last night. You sounded to be the most popular guy that wasn't there. I mean, Sonny mentioned you, Dusty mentioned you. And would you, you know, what do you think about that? And he said, you know, I have so many folks ask me if I would go in their Hall of Fame. And, they're not beating down my door, but I'm really not interested. And then, of course, he went on a rant about Laurinaitis. Not a huge fan of Laurinaitis or Stephanie.
So
based on that, I don't see that happening.
What do you think, we've kind of tried to get any guests that we've had on their take on this, because I think it's kind of a hot-button issue, and this goes hand-in-hand now with the news that Vince is taking the wrestling out of WWE. They're just going to go by WWE from now on. Do you think when Triple H takes over that all this shit is going to go away and he's going to take it back, or do you think he's bought into this whole family mantra and he's going to continue to push it forward? Because I think the idea that they want to use their knowledge to basically, lease it out to other promotions to put on events, I think that's a great idea because they are so good at their production. Like, if they could say, oh, Britney Spears is going on tour, we'll handle the booking of the arena and all the pyro and all the, you know, promotion for you for a fee. And I think that's a brilliant idea. I just wish they'd keep it completely separate from, you know, the wrestling portion of it. Do you see that something that, in your experience, you think Triple H will take it back to?
you know, I have not sat down and read all the little changes that are in the works right now. You know, with the economy as it is, it's not a bad idea to expand, you know, what you're, you know, and folks right now are doing this right now. They're doing, you know, trying to do things on the side for a little supplemental income. And I think WWE's got the same mindset there. And in terms of when Triple H takes over, if there will be any significant changes, you know, he's, a lot of people don't like him, but for what he is, I think he's one of the best wrestlers we've had in the past 20 years. I don't think that you're going to turn on WWE television and not see matches. I just think that's, yeah, I don't think that it's just going to become a soap opera without the wrestling.
Well, Vince's thing is, I think they're going to keep the matches, but it sounds like it started with that whole Drew Carey issue where the Entertainment Magazine, you know, put a thing in about how Drew Carey is going into the Wrestling Hall of Fame, and they called and complained and said, you know, we're not a Wrestling Hall of Fame, it's a sports entertainment, and we don't put on matches, we put on entertainments, whatever the hell that is. So I don't know.
My take on that is, I think that PR guy didn't get a lot of sleep that night before, and he probably vented at the wrong guy.
That's what I'm thinking, too. That definitely seemed a little out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From a booking perspective, and we'll get more into this because I'm completely fascinated by your opinion of the show itself since you were there. It seems like booking-wise, they've gotten kind of, I don't know, the focus has been lost. And me being a big Triple H fan, as everyone here in the Place to Be universe knows, I'm very much looking forward to seeing him take the reins creatively. Stephanie right now apparently is, I don't want to say she's not in the picture, but she's apparently taking care of the three girls, so she's not really around, unless they're still driving around in that big Winnebago. But Vince has clearly, you know, we've seen, and we've said it in the past, here and there, Vince has kind of lost his mind a little bit. The XFL and some other ideas, probably the WBF. But right now, I'm a little nervous, and I said this, Justin and I, when we recapped WrestleMania 27, we were a little, I'm just very scared right now at the future of the meat and potatoes of this company. Do you feel that way too, particularly after seeing what you saw two Sundays ago?
Scared, I don't know if I'd go that far, because at the end of the day, it's about selling tickets, and that place was sold out. So they obviously are doing something right. In terms of how the show came off, now I was there live, so it is going to be a biased opinion. There have been very few wrestling shows that I've been to that I did not enjoy, so obviously I really enjoyed being at WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
If I were watching it on television, I'd probably have a few more bones to pick with it. The production obviously was there. The matches you could argue about. I mean, there was some quality stuff there. Edge and Del Rio was strong. Orton and Punk was strong, though I was hoping for a little bit more. And in terms of the main event, the only really thing I was walking in there with my fingers crossed about is that Miz would retain under any circumstances, because I saw it as such a huge shot in the foot if after the past 6 months they were to put the belt on Cena. I think they really needed to establish Miz with a WrestleMania win, and that's what they did, so I was fine with that. But, yes, you could easily nitpick that match and say, you know, that was a weak match or that wasn't main event WrestleMania quality. Yeah, I wouldn't really argue on that, but I think the right person went over for the future of the company.
Now, it's funny because, you know, we kind of discussed this in our recap, so we won't get into it in too much detail, but we both felt a big part of it was maybe that they kind of knew in a way they were being set up to fail with that finish. I mean, it was such an awful finish. And from what I was actually reading over the last couple of days, it seemed like Vince kind of came up with that finish at the last minute. And it, you know, things changed a few times. And there's so many other ways they could have done that. They didn't need to do the double count out. They could have just had Rock come out and cost Cena the title. So to me, it seemed like they knew what was coming. And I think it affected the in-ring performance of both men.
Here's what I think about that. I think if you were to ask the average fan before WrestleMania how that match would end, they would say Rock, Stone Cold, Cena, the match.
Right.
So in doing what they did, they've got a double count out, which right there kind of elevates Miz just a little bit because Cena couldn't beat him, and it was basically a draw.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Rock coming out. So it's kind of like, and I don't mean to compare one nerdy thing with another nerdy thing, but if for a lot of the fans that went in and saw Star Trek II, if anyone is old enough to remember seeing that in theaters, everyone knew that Spock was going to die, and so they killed him off in the first 30 seconds. And then realized, oh, wait, that was just a training scenario, and then they killed him off an hour and a half later. So it was kind of like we all expected Rock to come out, but we didn't know. You know, we thought it was going to be during the match, and now it's after the match, and now he's restarting the match, and now he's interfering in the match.
Do you think being there live, though, that would have been better earlier in the show and ending with the Taker Triple H match, or do you think that layout was fine?
No.
Because I just feel like having the double count out last was just kind of tough.
Well, it didn't end that way.
I know.
And that was the reason Rock came back out. No, I think with the buildup of the show, you had to end it with Rock. He was selling the tickets. He was, you know, the reason everyone was tuning into the show. And in fact, before WrestleMania, and you can go on the blog right now, I was arguing you cannot close with Triple H, Undertaker. And that's not disrespect to them. I know it would be a good match, but I want that last match of WrestleMania and that last shot of WrestleMania to be that clip that we see the whole, you know, rest of the year when they're advertising WrestleMania.
Right.
And that opening package for all the WrestleManias from here until they stop doing them. And I really think that's got to be on, you know, either the title or the top guy in the company. And in the case of Miz, you know, we got both.
How was your feeling being there live, the Rock's promo to start the show? Because on TV it came across as not his best stuff and also a little bit long. Did you feel that way there live, or was it just seeing the Rock in that environment, was it okay for you?
No, I thought it was long and boring.
Okay, all right. Good. I think that's pretty much universal.
Yeah. Came off on TV long and boring, too. Before we get into the meat of the show, let's start from the beginning of the week. Because you, my friend, you covered everything. You were like the official guy of the week for WrestleMania. You were everywhere. You might have even played in the golf tournament and nobody noticed.
was this your first Mania live?
Third. I did 20, and I did 24 in Orlando.
Okay. All right, I was just curious to set the stage. Oh, go ahead, Scott. I'll let
okay.
you...
You know, I remember Graham, when you were on my old radio show, you had mentioned 20. I forgot you had said you were at you were in Orlando, but Justin and I, of course, were at the Garden as well for WrestleMania 20. So, talk about access. Obviously, there's pictures of on the Facebook page for the History of WWE and here on your board. You were with Miz and A-Rai. What was access like? Was it, you know, what was the layout like? Was it, how were the fans? Was it easy to do things? What was the company reps like? How was the whole layout for the access?
Access was cool. it was the Georgia World Congress Center, which is essentially an extension of the Georgia Dome, so you're, you know, walking distance. you walk in, and after you, you know, buy your ticket or, you know, pass along your ticket, you walk in, and it's basically a giant convention center that is roped off in some areas. But you walk in, and to your right, there'll be merchandise stands. Beyond that is the superstar entrance where you can, you know, walk out like Batista and do the machine gun dance. There was, and this was pretty funny, I was walking in with my fiance Cherish, and we walk in, and we see the three count trivia, and she nudges me and says, "Go win me something." So I did the trivia first. Now, unfortunately, you didn't win anything. You were entered into a drawing for a replica belt signed by Triple H, but I tore it up, so I got entered into that. Let's see what else was there. There was the Undertaker's graveyard, where you know the special effects here were pretty cool. They had, you know, smoke and they had the graves of all his previous, you know, WrestleMania opponents, and then there was a fresh one for Triple H. You could get your picture taken in the graveyard, and they give you an online code where you go to, you know, WrestleMania.com and type in the code, and you can download the picture absolutely free. They had pretty much the entire time there were folks signing. Now, unfortunately, you know, we had the VIP pass for Miz, so obviously had to do that. But if you were to wait in line for someone else, I mean, that line might be moving, but that's still a long line. So we really didn't end up getting anyone else. But while I was there, Regal was there, Christian was there. We did Friday night and saw Roddy Piper team with Rob Dyrdek, which was kind of cool. And Dyrdek did a... Do you guys know who that is? Skateboarder, he's got his own reality show.
You know, I think I read something about him doing it. I don't know him.
I don't either.
Okay. It's an entertaining show if you get a chance. But he actually skateboarded into the ring, which is pretty cool. And they wrestled Zack Ryder and Tyson Kidd. You know, saw some other matches. Mark Henry against Primo.
Were you there for the core attack on Vlad?
No, but I called it several days in advance. I was on a different show, and I was saying, why is Kozlov in this match? You know, Santino's over, King's over, show's over. Kozlov not. Would not be surprised if they did an injury angle.
That's
cool. Apparently they were listening and did.
Yeah, it seemed, you know, there were kind of that split decision, wondering if Kofi, because Kofi obviously deserved to be on the show, or somebody about that thought maybe Nash was going to get put in that spot as well.
Yeah, and Nash actually tweeted that he was bringing his gear just in case.
Now, did you go to the Hall of Fame?
Yes.
How was that?
It was fine. I mean, I did 24, and 24 was pretty cool with Flair going in, and I think that was a hotter crowd. My complaint with the Hall of Fame, WWE is completely in the right for saying, you know, please dress up, please no catcalls. However, here's the downside. They've been training their fans for the past 15 years to do the catcalls, so you can't really say after all that, oh, that's fine, but just not right now.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The equivalent is Vince McMahon coming out in full Vince McMahon character and saying, shut up. Now, what's the crowd going to do? They're going to get louder.
Right.
So, I wish that they didn't do the big venues for that. I wish that they did what they used to do with the Hall of Fame and do, you know, either the smaller venues or the hotel, you know.
Ballroom.
Convention. Yeah, ballroom. So it's a smaller group of fans, but you can also raise the prices.
Mm-hmm.
And that in of itself keeps out the disrespect for fans that just want to show up and drink a lot and, you know, whenever Sonny gets up there, say, show us your tits or something like that. I don't want
right.
to hear that. That's not why I paid for a ticket.
Exactly.
Right.
Not
yeah, that,
not, not,
that,
not that either of us would mind.
300 shows
but,
a year. You don't need to hear it.
Yeah. Not
there.
That either of us would mind.
Right.
She looked great,
by
the way.
Who gave the best acceptance speech?
I'm trying to remember who all was there. Bob Armstrong, I think that I really enjoyed hearing Road Dogg get up there. Bob was fine. Abdullah threw me off because I had never heard him speak before, and I didn't know he sounded like Mike Tyson.
Does he really? That's funny.
Pretty much. It's pretty high-pitched.
Well, according to Billy Graham, he shouldn't even be near the Hall of Fame, Abdul the Butcher. He went off in some interview or something saying that he wants to be out of the Hall of Fame since Abdullah the Butcher's in it.
Billy's insane, and we shouldn't give him any more coverage.
Yeah, he's
okay,
reaching
he's reaching
Billy Jack Haynes levels now. So.
Yeah. Drew Carey was cringeworthy. The crowd just turned on him instantly, and at the end he was just grasping for straws so badly that he's just started randomly praising everyone backstage and name-dropping, like, oh, met John Cena, blah, 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 just to hope, you know, some fans would pop for that. Now, by the time he left, I think he had done that enough so that there actually was an applause. But what you saw on television was so edited, it was unbelievable. He was booed out of the building. And after about 10 seconds, I just couldn't even look up.
Yeah, because he pretty much admitted that he didn't know, you know, why he was there. Obviously, the reason was to promote his show. and to give them a name to sell for the TV portion of it. But, I mean, I think even he knew it was kind of a joke. I mean, at least the other guys who have gone in, you know, a guy like Pete Rose and Refrigerator Perry, even though he was only out once, you know, he was kind of iconic for that WrestleMania.
And I think Uecker would have been better off. They would have been better off if they had gone with someone that did more than one appearance and that actually knew the product.
Right, and someone that, you know, was just kind of known more, or, you know, kind of like underground, you know, like Pete Rose. No one was ever going to boo him for going in. I mean, you know, it just made sense. Yep. He was a part of so many WrestleMania moments and memorable ones, and same with Uecker. So, yeah, Drew Carey just had that one, you know, Rumble appearance, and outside of that, it was never really much.
Unfortunately,
he didn't have... Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Graham, unfortunately, two of the guys that I think Pitten fans would mark out on in terms of the celebrity wing, really are not, whose PR images aren't the best at the moment, and that's Mike Tyson. Although Tyson's not that bad. I mean, he was on Raw.
Yeah.
And obviously Lawrence Taylor. I think fans would mark out at both of them.
Oh, yeah.
LT is not exactly in a very good light right now. No. But
anyway. I'm surprised Mr. T hasn't got in yet. He seems like someone they'd put in.
Or even Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah, Cyndi Lauper. That's another one. And actually, I just had one in my head now. I forgot who. Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know, he's been on a few times. He's another name. They could stick in there. And, you know, they have other ones, but I just. Or even Trump. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if Trump goes in at some point.
I think Trump. Donald Trump would go in at some point, yeah.
The fans just didn't buy Drew. And it was. We all knew that weeks beforehand.
Hmm. I was watching it on television. I got emotional during Animal and. Ellering's speech, particularly when they put the little hawk figure on the podium, that choked me up.
Yeah.
How was that feeling in the arena?
I think if you watched the television version, it was just it was basically the actual show, and they just brought it to the slaughterhouse. It was such a misrepresentation as to the feel of the show.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a good speech. Ellering was hysterical. In that he would do Ellering, he would do, you know, he would, you know, find the sentences where he could find, you know, 10-syllable words and put them together. Animal would just look at him and go, I don't, and he actually said this once, I have no idea what you just said. But, I mean, for a lot of younger fans, they would have no idea who Ellering was.
Right.
If you watched the Road Warriors, you knew that's who he was and that's what he did. So it really didn't throw you off, but... It didn't get a rousing reaction from the crowd.
I actually purposely don't even bother watching the TV version anymore because I know how just hacked up it is, and I just wait now for the WrestleMania DVD, and then I watch it, you know, in full. And even then, I'm sure it's still edited, but not as bad as the TV version. So at this point, the last few years, I've actually stopped completely even bothering with the TV one because I'm like, I'm not even going to... I just know it's not even close to being a representation of what it is.
Mm. Yeah, the Drew Carey thing was amazing how they cleaned that up.
Now, here's something interesting. When Sean did his farewell, although I just answered my own question. I just had thought in my head to answer my own question. Sean, obviously, Triple H did his induction, and then out came Nash and X-Pac. And I thought that Road Dogg would go up there. Then I realized they probably hates them all, so that's probably why he didn't. But I thought
this is actually a good transition, Scott, because I wanted to ask Graham, have you had any dealings with Scott Hall personally, just from any of... You know, seems like you have, you know, a few connections here and there.
I've met Scott at a fan convention, but beyond that, no. I had one of the contributors on my website interviewed him actually just a couple weeks ago and asked him whether he would be in Atlanta or not. He said, I was invited, but I want to stay on the wagon.
Okay, because since then, he's obviously gone way off the tracks. I know you're a little behind for me in a way. I don't know if you've caught up with that whole story yet, how he went.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I don't know if you did you see that video of him in the Fall River show in Massachusetts?
I don't want to see it.
It is so... I didn't want to watch it, and I literally... I almost had tears in my eyes. I just felt so bad for this fucking guy. He comes out, and he's, like, doing the razor thing, and he just looks like... I don't even know how he's alive. He just, like, stumbles out. They walk him down, and then it's like someone's grandfather. He's in the ring, and he does that, like, spinning Razor Ramon punch, and he literally... had to take baby steps in Revolutions, and then the poor bastard, the indie guy, had to sell it. It was such a disaster. I could not believe they went through with that match. And I just feel
that's
so bad. It's like the guy is just so... You just want to see him get his shit together, and he can't. You know, he's back in the hospital now again.
Yeah, it's kind of like...
I mean, Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Graham. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, if you guys want to check out the interview, he's very, you know, upfront. He doesn't hide much. He talks about his career. Talks about, you know, I know Nash and X-Pac are going to be in Atlanta. They're doing the party thing. I just don't think that's, you know, the responsible thing for me to do right now. And for him to say that and then end up in the situation that he was in, you feel bad for him.
And I wonder how much of that drove him to this, knowing, watching that, maybe seeing them all together and knowing, like, he couldn't be part of that. And maybe that's kind of what drove him back off.
I hope not, because that was his call.
Yeah, no, you're right. And, well, maybe he just knew he couldn't. I mean, either way, it sounded like maybe it was something that, if he went or if he didn't go, was going to be trouble. But, I don't know, someone posted on our board that Nash said in a tweet or something that he's having Hall move in with him now to watch him. So I don't know if that's religion or not. But I mean, it sounds like Nash is doing all he can, and it sounds like Vince did all he could for this guy. But he's just, like, you know, following in the Jake Roberts footsteps. Just a guy that's been given so many chances and has such a great mind. You know, could you imagine Hall kind of, you know, if he would have always stayed clean, what he really could have been? It's just such a waste of talent.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate. I mean, he's had every opportunity with all these companies. TNA, he looked washed out, and I agree with you, Justin. I trying to actually watch that video just made me uncomfortable. After about 5 minutes, I shut it off. I couldn't watch anymore. It was just making me uncomfortable. It was like that 99 pay per view when Jake was weaving the friggin' snake between his crotch, you know, rubbing fat ladies' boobs. I mean, it's just uncomfortable. It's just uncomfortable to watch.
It was just depressing along the lines of, like, WrestleMania 15 when you see Gorilla. You know, so beaten down and thin and just not healthy looking. And it's just kind of long, though. And obviously, Gorilla didn't have the problems that Hall has, but it was one of those moments where you're like, wow, this is a guy, you know, I watched growing up and he was so great. And now you just see him out there. Like, it's just sad to look at. It's just,
yeah.
But anyway, moving on to more happy topics,
yes.
Graham. Tell us, before we get to WrestleMania itself, what other. I know you attended a couple of the indie shows around. You want to tell us anything about those? Any cool stories? Or
On Friday, I hit Ring of Honor, and that was fun. Got to see a lot of friends there. Actually got to go to dinner after the show, which probably would have been about midnight, over at Gladys Knight's Chicken Waffles in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And here's some of the people that were there. Mike Johnson from PW Insider, great guy.
Oh, yeah.
Huge fan of the website, by the way. Also, and I don't know if you guys have ever met him, but you will know his face, Vladimir, guy that used to go to all the WrestleMania shows, Madison Square Garden.
I marked out big time when I saw that picture you posted with him.
Yes.
I loved it. I always loved Vladimir with his tank tops.
Yes, we were very excited about that. That was a good one.
So here's kind of the story. We're waiting outside the restaurant because we got about a crowd of probably 15 with us, and I see this guy walk past, and he gets in one of the cars in the parking lot, and I'm talking with a few friends of mine, and I said, dude, that's that guy. And Mike's like, what guy? And I said, Mike, that's the guy that used to go to all the, you know, WrestleMania's. Oh, Vlad? He's one of my best friends. I've never told you that. No.
That's funny.
So when we got to go inside, Mike's like, Vlad, you sit next to Graham. He's going to mark out. So I got to interview him basically the whole dinner.
That was awesome.
Tremendous.
Now, does he still, I mean, obviously I haven't seen him in a long time. Is he just not... did he kind of grow out of the product? Obviously, he goes to these kind of functions, but is he not really a fan of the current product?
I think he eats it all up. It's just to the point now where he can't get off work as much as he used to, and he said he lives in Manhattan, so I'm sure he still goes to, you know, the Garden and Meadowlands. But he said, you know, I used to go to King of the Ring, SummerSlam, Survivor Series, Royal Rumble. We used to drive all over the place travel, and I just, you know, can't expense-wise do that anymore. He still does WrestleMania.
Yep.
And his friend Charlie, who, you know, they're really good friends, and they've gone to all these shows together. You guys have probably seen Charlie in the crowd plenty of times, too. Charlie said, you know, I've been to every WrestleMania.
Oh, wow.
So him and Howard Finkel have been to every WrestleMania. Vlad missed five. He missed WrestleMania 5, but that was it.
Wow, that is... They should do an ad with those guys. I mean, you know, it's too bad they don't think of stuff like that. Like, you know, they have the Super Bowl commercials. The guys have been to all the Super Bowls. I mean,
yeah.
I wish Vince would, you know, take advantage of stuff like this. Be like, you know, here are these two guys that combined have only missed one Mania. You know, that's like such a dedication to his product. It's something I wish that, or even do a website piece on it, you know?
Yeah. You know, if you go to a lot of the shows and you set up close, you get to take home your chair.
Yes.
Let's see, he's got 34 chairs.
Wow. That's impressive.
Now, he was a big ECW guy, too, right? Because I remember seeing him pop up at the arena shows a lot of times. Was he a big ECW guy, too? Didn't he pop up in the ECW arena shows a bunch of times, too? Next to, like, the
I would not be surprised.
I think he was. I think I remember seeing him in some of those history of ECW shows.
Yeah, and he would be there with, like, I think he sat next to the dude with the straw hat, hat guy, or whatever the hell his name is. I think he was,
the guy with the beard, Faith No More guy.
The Faith No More guy, yeah. I think he sat in that section. Anybody else, did you see Graham kind of floating around the, you know, the area during the week, guys that kind of snuck up on you that you were surprised to see?
Let's see, on Thursday or Friday, I guess it was Friday, maybe like Friday afternoon before the show. Me and my fiance went over to World of Coca-Cola, which is a must-see whenever you go to Atlanta. I think we've been about three or four times at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And on our way back, this is we're staying just a few blocks away from Centennial Park. And Centennial Park basically connects everything. I mean, you've got CNN Center across the street. You've got the aquarium, World of Coca-Cola. As it itself, Centennial Park, I think, is a tourist attraction. It's so huge and pretty, and they did a really good job on it. So Thursday and Friday, maybe even Saturday, they had a big dog show out there, and where they would throw frisbees and dogs would do flips and catch it and everything. So we're crossing the street from World of Coca-Cola to Centennial Park and all the dog stuff's going on. Crossing the street with us is Hornswoggle pushing a baby carriage. That in itself is an visual. Yeah. So it looked like he was with his wife or girlfriend or whatever, and we didn't want to disturb him because they were obviously just doing a family thing. But so it's all Hornswoggle, and then I'm trying to think else what else we got. Friday, Ring of Honor, met Vlad, blah blah blah. Saturday did Ring of Honor. And then after Ring of Honor, if you're in town after about a day or so, you find out what hotel the guys are staying at.
Right.
So a few of my friends are like, well, let's just, you know, it's after the Hall of Fame. We got nothing to do. Let's just walk up to the Hyatt Regency and see who's at the bar. I'm like, all right. So we're about to get to, maybe a block out. And I used to be on the Monday Night Mayhem radio show. Jim Molyneux, Scott Hudson, a few other guys. So they actually bumped into us, finally got to meet him all in person. Hmm. And Chris Hero just happened to be at that corner. Saw Ring of Honor the night before with him and Claudio against Shelton and Charlie. And that was a great match. So I got to meet him. We go to the hotel bar, and this was probably midnight. And the hotel, you walk in. It's a nice hotel. I mean, it's probably nicer than, as nice as any hotel I've stayed at. And the bar is pretty unique. It's you walk in the bar area, and the bar is kind of an island, and then all the seating is around it. So we get in, have to wait forever to get a beer, just because there's probably 200 people in or around the bar. It's a party unto itself.
Right.
And we start looking around. And immediately to my left is Sergeant Slaughter. Behind me is Teddy Long and his wife. The table to the left is Larry Hennig and Bob Orton Jr. Start walking around a little bit. Hacksaw Jim Duggan comes out. Chavo Guerrero's there, Chavo Jr. Flair shows up, which was a surprise. He showed up, I guess, Friday. So he's at the bar. Tommy Dreamer's at the bar, and there's a lot of talk. Was Tommy going to take the VP position because that just became available?
Right.
Pat Patterson is there. Tom Pritchard is there. Norman Smiley is there. Glacier is there. Steve Austin is there. Jim Ross is there. Jerry Lawler is there. Who else? Xbox showed up. Natalia showed up.
Sounds like a mid-90s battle royal.
So you definitely picked the right hotel bar to visit, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it really wasn't an environment where you could meet these guys.
Right.
Austin shows up. He's in the bar, but there are strategically placed three bodyguards around him.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's so packed that even though Ric Flair is 5 feet to your left, you have to cut through 20 people to say hi.
Right.
But it was pretty cool. I'll get these pictures eventually because a friend of mine took them, but I got my picture taken with Pat Patterson, which was awesome. Norman Smiley, Road Warrior Animal, was outside. Got to see him and talk with him just after the Hall of Fame. Paul Ellering's family, Road Warrior Animal's family, were having dinner. Sonny was taking pictures with them. So it was a really cool environment.
Now, do any of these guys know your site?
Well, like I said, it wasn't really conducive to saying hi because you could barely talk. You could barely hear yourself talk.
Yeah.
But it was just pretty cool to be stuck amongst the entire roster almost.
Yeah, that definitely sounds like a kind of a once-in-a-lifetime thing.
It really is. I don't think that to have that many people in one place at the same time, I think, is like walking through the gates of wrestling heaven. I don't think you'd ever find something like that again.
They smartened up. Now, this was the night before WrestleMania, and I met Miz the next day. I said, dude, that hotel was rocking. Did you get any sleep? He said, no, there's never any sleep when you're the WWE champion. But they smartened up because the night of WrestleMania, after the show, and maybe even the next day, you could not get in the hotel without a key.
Oh, okay.
You had to be staying there, which honestly, I think they should have done that from the start.
Darn.
Yeah, most likely.
Makes sense.
So, Graham, now attending this Mania, and as you said as well, 20 and 24, which of the three, two different perspectives, which of the three did you feel is the best card to watch live, and which was your most memorable one to see live?
Twenty, and you guys were there. You knew all the good reasons why it was good to be at that one. We cannot speak of these reasons anymore because they never happened.
Right.
In this world, they are. In the Place to Be universe, they did. We buck trends.
Oh, okay.
Enough of that.
Okay. Whoever this Chris Benoit guy is, I'm sure he was good.
Yeah, I've seen his name all over your site, and I wasn't sure who he was.
But I thought he was a vanilla midget. I don't know.
excuse me. 24 was fun. Orlando was such a tourist happy location that it was lots of fun. I really enjoyed being rained on and getting the power knocked out during the Divas match. as warm and as humid as the place was, I welcomed that rainfall. And I had floor seats to that. I had floor seats to 20. And I noticed, because I'm paying about the same price for these tickets no matter what year it is, about the 200, 250 range, floor seats at Madison Square Garden, floor seats much further from the ring in Orlando. And at this one, didn't even get floor seats, got one level off the floor. Same price for all of them. So you can tell that they're steadily raising the raising the ticket prices for WrestleMania.
Right.
If I was to pick one, probably 20.
Yeah, 20. I mean, you know, I see fans kind of get down on that show. Now, you know, saying Mia's a little bit long, a little bit bloated with some of the matches, but I mean, it's just one of those, like you say, just to be there live and having that experience with the ending with Benoit and Eddie, and just Benoit finally getting that moment, and the thing that we never thought we'd see, you know, Triple H tapping to him clean in the middle of the ring was just one of those, you know, and Undertaker's return too, because, you know, having him finally come back in that gimmick was pretty big at the time as well. So I'm with you.
Yeah,
I am too.
They did a really good job. There's a lot of and they did a good job of getting guys that didn't have programs on the show. They did those, you know, tag team 4-way or 12-way or whatever it was. But almost everyone that was anyone was on that show.
Right.
But the major programs basically started at Survivor Series, and that's when Benoit made Lesnar tap. That, you know, put Benoit in the title picture. That's when you see Lesnar and Goldberg have their confrontation. I mean, they did a really good job of building that up. And that's when Kane buried, well, just after Kane buried Undertaker. Or no, it was at Survivor Series.
It was at that show, yeah.
So you've got 6 months of build-up for all the major programs, which was great.
And even Christian and Jericho was kind of starting around that time as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But that's why I'm honestly really excited about Rock and Cena, planning it a year out. Because here's the thing. They can go so many different directions. But and honestly, they could, you know, if they really wanted to, they could shoot. They could go early and put him on SummerSlam and just say, "We're giving you a WrestleMania match now because you demanded it, Cena demanded it, Rock demanded it. It's in Hollywood, you know, it's near where Rock lives." They could do that. But in of itself, saying that we're going to give you this match a year out instantly creates anticipation for WrestleMania next year, instantly has people looking online to see what kind of hotel deals they can get in Miami. I know this because I've already done this. Mm-hmm. But even if they don't give that match away at WrestleMania, even if they give it away beforehand, you know, they can have so much creativity. They can take it so many different directions, have so much creativity with it. I'm fine if we don't get it at WrestleMania next year because I'm already kind of interested in what they do next.
Do you think, this is kind of an idea we threw around on our last show, do you think they would ever do something now? Because this would be tough, because I don't know if you want to take him off TV, but what if they took Cena off later in the year, have him kind of go through the summer, and then have him say, you know what, maybe someone, he comes close to getting seriously injured at SummerSlam by someone, he's like, I can't risk this match, I want Rock so bad, I'm going into training. And then do like an MMA thing where, you know, their next match, you know, we won't see Cena wrestle until March. He's going into training. And every few weeks we get vignettes of him working out, him, you know, training. We get vignettes of Rock training. Is that something you think they could pull off, having him go into training like that to say, I'm going to avoid injury? And then you also avoid any kind of legit injury that may pop up anyway.
Definitely. I mean, there have been already so many instances of, you know, him taking house shows off to go film, or him taking house shows off to go do publicity somewhere. And also what that does is, because if you know that Cena and Rock is going to be the main event, or, you know, the headliner, well, what's that title match going to be? Who can you elevate to get in the main event title picture at WrestleMania? Is it going to be, just name out of the air, a John Morrison versus Miz? Mm-hmm. Or Sheamus versus somebody, or, you know,
Punk.
You've got an opportunity there when you take Cena out of the house show circuit and maybe even off TV as well. Who do you put in that slot? And I think they really need to do, and they've done it. I mean, especially with Miz, they need to build stars so when Cena's gone, and Taker obviously is pretty much off TV, Triple H slowing down, who's going to be there when they're gone?
And I think they should go all the way with this, Bill. I say hang the banner in the arena every show, have a countdown every show, have a countdown on the website, you know, 350 days, 349 days,
yeah.
You know, and just really, might as well. If they're going to do this, you might as well do it big time. You might as well go all the way with it.
I agree. Yeah, I'm still very skeptical. I'm a little nervous of how they could possibly, because I got to be honest with you, Graham, it might have looked cool live, but on TV, that ending looked really shitty. and I have
Which one, on Raw?
No, the end of the end on Raw was fine. No, the end of Mania, and I just have a bad. I just really feel very queasy about being able to maintain the intensity of this match for the next
347
days.
No. I don't think you can. I think you've got to put it on the back burner. I think you've got to have, for the time being, Cena versus Miz, or, you know, I think that's the logical direction to take it. But no, you can't force Rock Cena every week. People will not want to watch the show. You've got to, and honestly, I don't think we're going to see Rock on television again for months.
There were rumors he might fight Miz at SummerSlam. That was before this was announced. Do you think that's something they should do, or do you think the next person, or the first person Rock fights, should be Cena?
I think it should be Cena.
Okay, so you don't think they should maybe do Rock Miz and then Rock Cena?
I don't know. I wouldn't. It would elevate Miz, obviously, because he's working with Rock, and I think, you know, the Cena-Rock-Miz situation has benefited no one more than Miz to be working with these guys. And I think Rock should do something at SummerSlam. I think that's a logical situation for him, but I don't think him and Miz right now.
What do you think happens if, you know, come November, some major company comes out and says, Rock, we have this huge franchise movie we want to make. We want you to be the guy, you know, whatever. Your Spider-Man, your version of Batman, whatever it is. And they say, we need to start filming in basically a real-life Entourage episode. You know, they say, we need to start filming in January. Can you see Rock A, what would they do? And B, do you see Rock ever maybe pulling something like that, saying, hey, you know what, I can't pass this opportunity up, Vince. They won't let me film, you know, they won't let me wrestle, I got to be in this film. Do they turn to a guy like Austin, or do you think it's something that's kind of one of those long shot situations?
I don't think he would go back on his word, but if for whatever reason he did see a better opportunity, I think they can easily play that into the storyline and introduce somebody else. It's just like when someone accidentally breaks their leg, well, then you make it part of the show.
I mean, I don't know who else. There's only two possibilities I could see to wrestle Cena if Rock somehow got taken out of that match, and that's Austin would be one or Undertaker would be the other. I think outside of those two, I don't know who else you would stick in that slot to make the fans be
okay. Yeah, probably Undertaker.
To not be disappointed.
Yeah.
I tell you something, Cena right now would probably be the one guy after, you know, almost seeing my dream come true of Triple H breaking the streak. Cena's probably the only other guy that could legitimately... He's probably the only guy left that could legitimately make you think, you know, if there's anybody that they're going to do it for, it'll probably be him. And boy, would that cause a big shitstorm.
Yeah.
But other than that, what
well,
do you
that
think...
that was actually my next question, too, for Graham. Who do you see facing? Do you think Taker ends it next year at 20-0, or do you think he... you know, who do you see being in that spot? Because do you see it being Triple H again? Because... Scott and I kind of had a little discussion on this, saying I personally don't believe that. You know, I think believability is a big part of these matches now. You thought maybe Shawn could do it. I don't know if Triple H will be believable as an opponent again, as someone who could beat Taker.
How about this scenario? We see Taker show up in the summer. Triple H says, "Welcome back. I want you at SummerSlam." Taker says, "Sure." Triple H beats him. It's not WrestleMania. Taker can lose if it's not WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And or, you know, or SummerSlam, or I mean, basically any other show.
Right.
And then they go into WrestleMania next year. We're tied 1-1. One of us is, you know, or both of us are going out. Who's winning? I think that would help the intrigue.
I don't know. Maybe a little bit, but I still think it becomes transparent that Triple H got that win at SummerSlam just to set up that. To me, I mean, I thought it was a great match. I think they performed way over their head. I just don't know if... A, they could do it again, and B, I don't know. It's, the Shawn Taker thing was just different than the Triple H Taker thing. I just don't know if it's a believable draw for a second year in a row. I mean, I think there are other guys.
I don't think it was a believable draw this time.
Yeah, I think you're right. I agree. And there are guys, I think, that could bring a great match out of Taker who needs to be carried, I think, a little bit at this point. Guys like Punk, guys like Jericho. But, you know, are they believable either? You know,
no.
I don't know.
No.
So. It's tough. It's
honestly, I had no disrespect to either guy, but I had zero interest in the match. And after their entrances, I went and got merchandise.
I think he just broke down.
Right,
I heard him.
You slay me, Cawthon. You slay me. What'd you buy? A foam?
Okay.
Let me guess. You bought a Duggan foam 2x4, didn't you? Oh, you killed
me. No, but I have one. No, but I've got a compliment going their way. When I get back in my seat, I'm watching the big screen. Because it is just close up on Triple H's face. And within 30 seconds, I know exactly where they are in the match. I know what Triple H is thinking. I know where they're going with the match. Triple H is thinking, I can't beat this man. I've thrown everything at him. I'm going to lose. And to his credit, I didn't have to watch the past 15 minutes to understand where the match was. I could just glance, okay, I know where they are. Now it's good. Now I really want to pay attention.
My whole beef with that match, the one negative thing I took from it, and I beat this into the ground on our other podcast, but I hated how the whole build-up was Triple H saying, I need to beat you, I need to beat you. It wasn't that I wanted to take you out, it's that he wanted to beat him. And then he hits him in the head with a chair and stares at him and tells him to get up. Why didn't he fucking pin him? That's all he's been talking about, was he wanted to beat him and end the streak. And then he has a chance where Taker's laying there unconscious, and he just stands there and stares at him. To me, it just kind of took me out of things a little bit. It's like, you know, just... I wish like Triple H could have collapsed at that point, and then they're both laying there. To me, that saves things a little
bit. Someone should challenge Taker to an amateur match where you just have to pin him for one, right?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Get Mike Rotundo in there.
I'd love if IRS came back for a WrestleMania match. Get revenge for Royal Rumble 95.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah, then out comes Kama to steal the urn. No, thanks. I'll pass.
Yep.
Now, Miami next year. Big show. Who's the guy you think you were just talking about? Let's just say that it is Cena, Rock, and let's just say for shits and giggles that it will be Triple H, Taker, too. Let's just get those four out of the equation. Your whoever's running things, Gerwitz, whoever the hell's back there. It doesn't matter to me. You're booking things. Based on the crop right now, who are the next two or the two or three guys that you like on the forefront going into 2012 and into that Mania show?
Sheamus. Miz.
How about Morrison?
Morrison has got to shut up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this Mania has left a bad... He left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths about this. One person you don't... One person you don't fuck with, because this is someone who started from the bottom and worked their way up, is Trish. Okay, mm-hmm. Trish was not the golden child when she came in 2000, by any stretch of the imagination. And she just flat out busted her ass for the last 10 years to get to where she is now. You know? And you know, to be treated like that by anybody is just not right. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think he's on the shit list right now. And
I don't know. I mean, obviously, I've read what everyone else has read, but, you know, unless you're listening in on their conversations, you don't really know the reason behind it. So I'm going to leave that off. But for the simple fact it happened is disappointing.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So if he can shut up and just, you know, do what he's been doing, because I think since the fall, certainly since Survivor Series, the guy's been on fire. I'm a huge fan. I think he can do a lot for the company. So you've got Sheamus, Miz, Morrison, and Punk, because I think certainly at this WrestleMania, Punk in that marquee match that went on, I think, a little too early in the show, mm-hmm. he is hitting his stride right now. He is in his prime. If you look at him now compared to 08 when he won Money in the Bank, or even 09 when he was feuding with Hardy, which I think that was great too, mm-hmm. he's come so far. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think he's had a whole bunch of fans backstage either.
No, he's definitely fought through a lot of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And look where he is now. I think he brings a lot to the table. He's obviously a good wrestler, but I think his psychology and the tone, obviously, is very different.
Yes.
But I think the psychology reminds me a lot of a heel Jake Roberts.
Mm. I was actually going to compare him to in-ring. He gives me like a big-time Bret Hart vibe. Psychology of his matches, the selling, the impact, every move kind of means something when he's, you know, just the way he was picking apart. Was just like Bret Hart.
There's
to me.
There's no wasted movement.
Mm. Right, exactly. So it's like, I think you're right. I think he's a combination with, you know, kind of Jake's psychology in his promos and his actions with Bret's in-ring presence. Just that smooth, everything's crisp, everything makes sense, and, you know, everything mm-hmm. builds that way. And actually, I wanted your take on Cody Rhodes, too, because he's someone, in my eyes, over the last year, his stock has risen. I think moving him to SmackDown and letting him kind of grow into that character, and, you know, his in-ring work was always there. He just was kind of bland, and now I think he's really putting it together. Is he someone that you see being a star?
Well, it's amazing what were people saying just before WrestleMania last year. That Ted DiBiase is going to be a star.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, it actually turns up being the tag team partner, not him. I think, you know, Cody's growing on me. I'm right there. I think he kind of had a bland character going on. But I really enjoyed the match at WrestleMania. And I think a lot of the fans, certainly in my section, enjoyed it because when he did that elevated suplex from the middle turnbuckle,
yes, that was
and
awesome.
He hit that, which was amazing. I'd never seen that before. Mm. I mean, aside from Davey Boy doing it from the mat.
Yeah, never
but
on the
after
ropes.
After he hit that, almost all the adult fans in my section started chanting, "Cody, Cody." And I looked over at my fiancé and said, "I have never heard that."
And that came across on TV that he was clearly the favorite the second half of that match. You were dead on. And when he won, it was a very audible cheer for him.
Yeah, and I love that finish, too. I thought that was a really cool finish.
He definitely is someone, you know, classic guy. Grew up in the business. You know, his dad was never the best in-ring guy, but, you know, one of the best psychology guys. And you could tell he definitely picked that up. And same goes for his brother, who to me is mm-hmm. one of the most underrated guys over the last 15 years, is Dustin Rhodes. And I think he was putting on some of the best matches of his career over the last few years, like on Superstars every week. So, you know, he definitely has it in him. and now that he kind of has that character and that hook, you know, I think he's definitely someone that's going to come out of nowhere to be a star. Now, do you see anyone kind of languishing on Raw right now that could use that same template as he got last year? Go to SmackDown, let them forget about you, come up with a character, and kind of rebuild your stock?
You know, one guy who I think deserves a lot of praise, and I think a lot of other fans have caught on to the bandwagon, because I saw a lot of fans chanting and doing his shtick at WrestleMania and at Raw, is Zack Ryder.
Mm-hmm.
He's I don't know if you guys have seen his video blogs, but they're hilarious, and it shows that he's got a lot of charisma, a lot of creativity that is not coming out on television. I watched the most recent one. He kind of talks about his WrestleMania experiences, and in one little segment he goes, yeah, I mean, that there were so many legends and alumni walking around. It was insane. And it cuts to him walking down the hall, hallway at the hotel. He bumps into a guy, and it is the former Scotty Goldman of WWE fame.
Yes.
Colt Cabana.
Colt Cabana.
He said, do I know you? No, I don't think so. It was just so hilarious. And he talks about his WrestleMania moment with Roddy Piper knocks him out with a coconut. And he goes, coconut? Really? Are you serious, Piper? And then it cuts to him outside holding up Roddy Piper action figure and a coconut, and he just smashes the action figure to death.
He, I think you're right. He definitely has a very big underground following, and I'm hoping it's catching on TV. I wish they would focus on him more, and this kind of leads into something that's been making me sad over the last few weeks, and actually last week was the final Superstars that's going to air at WGM now. I think it's going to be an internet show or a YouTube show from here on out. Mm-hmm. I think that show was so underrated, and I hear a lot of people that understand what it was supposed to be shit on it, being like, oh, who wants to watch this show? But it was so perfect for what it was, to give guys like him, Tyson Kidd, Goldust, Yoshitatsu, you know, like those guys, Regal, a place to wrestle every week. It was like a modern version of the old WCW Saturday Night, you know, in its final few years.
Right. Now, what they did good for the longest time, I think they kind of backtracked toward the end, is you would see more wrestling per episode in terms of a ratio, mm-hmm. certainly than you would on Raw or SmackDown. I mean, you could see roughly 30 minutes of an hour show be actually wrestling.
Yeah, and I mean, it definitely became one of my favorite shows to kind of just... It was a great late night, I'm falling asleep, I'm going to throw this on and watch it as I fall asleep show. And it had solid commentary because Stryker, who, you know, fell out of favor lately on the bigger shows, you know, was kind of good in that role on Superstars. He was kind of a little bit more laid back, not as hyper, and I think Scott Stanford was doing that as well. You know, a lot
yeah,
of commentary
well,
on that
was
show.
Doing there too for a while.
So, yeah, I mean, I was kind of sad to see that show go. I guess that's product maybe of them getting tough enough, and it's kind of becoming the fifth hour of programming. But
yeah, I'm going to have to train myself to go online and watch these shows, because honestly, ever since they moved NXT to the internet, I don't think I've watched beyond season two.
No, me neither. I'm with you there.
I didn't watch this last season either. I've enjoyed Tough Enough, though. The first episode I liked a lot. I'm looking forward to the second one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's good.
Mm. Graham, before we let you go, and let me tell you something. It's been an honor and a privilege for you to be with us on The Place to Be tonight. Coming up this summer, something that I've always wanted to go to and I never got a chance to, and this is actually close to your neck of the woods. Actually, it's always in your neck of the woods. And that's the NWA Legends Fan Fest. Which the link is on your site. This year, usually it's in Charlotte. It's usually in Flair Country. This year, it's actually in Hotlanta. What a big year for
it
the
is.
City of Atlanta. It's actually the first
it
weekend
is.
In August, August 4th to the 7th. Actually, it's during the week. Won't be able to go this year because our good friend is getting married this summer, so I won't be able to go this year. But are you thinking about going down this summer?
Well, yeah, and here's my main my mindset behind that. Usually I do like a vendor table event. I'm sorry, it's late. I can't even talk. Vendor table. And the thought behind that is I'm probably not going to make a whole lot of money selling tapes and DVDs and stuff, but it's good exposure for the website. And a lot of folks,
absolutely.
A lot of the older folks that go to these things have no idea that this website is out there. Another motivation for me to go this year is August 4th is my 30th birthday.
All right.
So, get to hang out with a lot of friends that traveled all over the country to get there.
That's tremendous.
That sounds like a hell of a present to me.
That is, absolutely. And I'm looking at some of the guys that are going to be there. Sonny's actually going to be there. This is actually pleasantly surprising. On Saturday of that weekend, Bobby's going to be there. Bobby the Brain Heenan, which is going to be nice, hopefully, to see, because, you know, every time we check his name on a website, he's dead or dying. It's nice to not see him dead or dying. And apparently he's going to be there on that Saturday, so that'll be pretty cool. But King Kong Bundy's going to be there. Larry Zbysko, RVD's going to be there for the first time. It's 1 year in Atlanta, because I'm looking at a thing on the side. In 2012, it'll be back in Charlotte. So, but yeah, it looks like it's going to be a fun time. It's August 4th through the 7th at the Marriott near the airport in Atlanta. It's the NWA Wrestling Legends Fan Fest weekend. Among the guests, just to fire some guys off, and let me know, Graham, let us know if you've met any of these guys. Ole Anderson, you ever meet Ole?
Oh yeah, plenty. He does basically every fan fest.
Is he still very grizzled and pissed off?
Oh yes. Here's the running joke. This is how you know it's fan fest. You walk in the hotel before you check in, and to your left, and this is the Hilton in University Park Hilton in Charlotte. You walk in the hotel, to your left are a bunch of couches, and then right beyond that are the elevators. Always, and this is your introduction to FanFest, there is a crowd sitting down in the chairs listening to Ole's stories. And Ole's talking about whatever. But that's how you know it's FanFest, because you walk in and there's Ole talking to fans.
That's tremendous.
Scott, I just wanted to tell a story quick to Graham, and I think he'll appreciate this one. When we went to the show up at Webster.
Oh, yes, of course.
Graham, our buddy John Walters, I'm not sure if you're aware of who he is, the indie guy. He was in Ring of Honor for a while. He still competes on the indie circuit.
Oh, the guy you interviewed?
Yes. Okay,
yeah, the Hurricane, yep.
Okay, yeah.
He was wrestling Just Incredible, and Ric Flair was the referee. So he's like, you know, why don't you guys come up, and, you know, I'll get you into the show or whatever, and we can hang out. So we went up for the show, and Greg Valentine was on the card. And, of course, as with most indie shows, they have the vendor table in the back with all the tapes, you know, dozens of DVDs, dozens of tapes.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, we look over there, and there's Greg Valentine in his tights and a T-shirt just sifting through old tapes with a big smirk on his face, just kind of taking it in. And I actually just kind of snapped a picture from afar. I don't want to go bother him because he looked, you know, really into what he was doing. But it's just one of my favorite pictures that we have. It was just a cool moment, like, to see a legend like that. I'm just kind of digging, you know, like a fan would, just digging through old tapes and DVDs, just kind of, you know, reminiscing of old shows.
An extension of that story. Just a quick extension of that story, Graham. I actually walked over, and I was buzzing through the tapes, and he came back over and was looking again. And I had to say something, because he's one of my brother's favorite guys. We're looking at tapes, and I was casually saying, oh, that's a great tape. He goes, yeah, I had a couple of good matches I have on here. I said, Mr. Valentine, I just got to let you know I'm a big fan. I don't want to take up your time, I said, but my brother was a huge fan of yours, and he had a picture, one of his favorite pictures of you, he cut out of the PWI, and he cut me off, and he said, let me guess, I broke Wahoo's leg. I said, that's right. He goes, I like that picture, too. This is so awesome. It was tremendous. I told my brother that, and he was marking out. It was tremendous. But those, it's fun like that. You know, these guys, he was so focused on, Justin's right, he was looking at, like, these mixtapes of, like, Crockett and all this other crazy stuff, and, you know, it's cool to see guys like that, you know, that miss those days, you know.
Well, here's one of my better stories from FanFest, and I've been going to these things since 2004, so there's plenty of stories. But I went, the last time I went was 2009, and I'm upstairs in the hotel room, and I think maybe I took a nap or something because I didn't get any sleep the night before, and my fiance calls me. She's working the table, and she said, so Elijah Burke's down here, and he wants to know how much for all these Crockett tapes.
That's funny.
And as it turns out, we could not reach a deal because there's no way I'm giving those tapes away for cheap, as hard as they are to find.
Right.
So it sounds like your fiance is a huge fan as well, huh?
I have amazing brainwashing powers. It did not start off this way, but just for an example... right now, she's wearing the new Sin Cara T-shirt.
Wow!
And he hasn't even wrestled yet. That's impressive.
She walked outside earlier because we went out to dinner, and she said, "Yeah, the landscaping guys at the apartment complex, and they're all Mexican." You go, "Oh, mystico, mystico!"
That is awesome. That might be the, one of the greatest stories I've ever heard.
I love that.
Mexican gardener is digging the Sinkhauer shirt.
And saying his other name, which is even better. Well, right. Graham, it has been a pleasure to be able to have you on tonight on the Place to Be podcast. Good luck with the continued with the site.
Well, thank you.
Continuing with your plans for your impending nuptials, of course, as well.
Letting us whore ourselves out on your site as well.
That is
also a big plus.
Yes. You scratch our back, we scratch yours. It's a great relationship.
we don't scratch his at all. He just continually scratches ours and helps us out.
That's, yeah, that's true.
We don't do much for him, unfortunately.
Well,
we try, but
he's already a main eventer. So, yeah. So if you are going, Graham, we'll have you on in August after you come back from that, and maybe you got some cool stories for us. I definitely want to go one year. I can't go this year again because our mutual friend's wedding is that weekend. But I definitely think I'm going to go next year, 2012, to Charlotte. I think that'll be fun.
Yeah, maybe we'll stay at the Compton residence, and I want to see all the clippings on the wall and everything else that you get in your beautiful mind bomb shelter down there.
Exactly.
What I'm looking at right now is a wall full of old school posters and a life size Undertaker cardboard stand up.
I knew it. I could picture it. I could see it now. All those old little white piece of paper cards. I picture those hanging all over the place with the matches from the various house shows.
More or less, yeah.
Tremendous. Well. It's been a pleasure, and I got a great song because we are all stars. I am going to play a great tune coming out of this. So, Graham Coffin, pleasure as always. Mr. Azzaro, I will speak to you soon. Enjoy DC this week.
Thank you, sir.
Enjoy the Nats. And this is the Place to Be podcast. And everyone, have a great week.